The topic that I'll be discussing while I'm with you here in Detroit are the topic is some verses from the first chapter of Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam. The scene in the first canto, excuse me, third canto, chapter 1, is Shukadeva Goswami speaking with Maharaj Parikshit, and previously, that actually goes back further, it's the sages headed by Shonaka, who heard from Suta Goswami in the first canto about, in chapter 13, Vidura's pilgrimage, and then he returned back to Hastinapur, having met Maitreya, having heard from Maitreya, he then returned to Hastinapur and delivered Dhritarashtra. So many things were discussed after that. The scene of Shukadeva Goswami entering the place where Maharaj Parikshit was, after having been cursed to die, was to give up his life, and Maharaj Parikshit asks some questions. Shukadeva Goswami responded. Shukadeva asked some more questions based upon what he heard. So, a whole lengthy discussion, particularly in the second canto, about the process of creation, because that was the question. How did Krishna do it? Krishna is the creator. How did he do it? Not that Maharaj Parikshit was an uneducated person and didn't know how he did it. But he wanted to understand more than the information part, like not just the technology of it, but you know the spirit of it. How did Krishna do it? So that was discussed. And then further, Lord Brahma's his meeting with Lord Vishnu, before even there was creation, and the dialogue between Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, the Chatrasloki verses are discussed. So at the beginning of this canto, Shonaka goes way back to the earlier part of the narration, and he wants to hear more about Krishna than about the creation of Krishna. So he asks about something in relation to Krishna, and that in relation to Krishna is Krishna's devotees are always in relation to Krishna. So he asks, you said something before about Vidura quitting home. Why did Vidura quit home? Because his home was the place where the eternal associates of Krishna reside, and the place of the Pandavas is the same as the place of Krishna. Krishna accepted that home not only as good as his own home, but as good as himself. Because Krishna's abode and Krishna are none different. Why did Vidura leave? Can you please explain? And you said also that when he was on pilgrimage, he heard from Maitreya. I'm sure those talks were very wonderful. Could you describe those talks between Vidura and Maitreya, please? So, that and some other questions launch about three cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it begins with this first chapter where why Vidura left home. And there's the apparent reason why Vidura left home. He was insulted by Duryodhana, so he left home. But it's not like Vidura is on the platform where, oh, somebody insulted me, I'm leaving. That's a very shallow, that's not the reason why Vidura left. So, there was an insult and Vidura left. But there's a much deeper understanding and reason behind all of this, which is what Shonaka wishes to hear. And they know that Sutta knows the answer, because Sutta is so qualified. Sutta heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And he not only heard from Shukadeva Goswami, he understood it. And not only he understood it, but he assimilated it. And he can explain it because of his great qualification. So they want to hear. We'll go back to the scene that's described as there was to be this, there was a conflict, and the Pandavas had been cheated of their kingdom, but a settlement was made finally that they would go in exile for some number of years, and at 1 year of incognito, and when they returned from that incognito situation, they would resume the kingdom. They were given back all of their property and the kingdom, and they would rule. That was the arrangement. And when that had been completed, the Pandavas were saying, okay, we're ready to receive the kingdom back. But there was no kingdom back. So, what to do? Krishna said, I'll go. Tried to make peace. And this described, Krishna tried to make peace. And he was told no by Duryodhan. And when Duryodhan said no, Dhritarashtra remained silent. He didn't say no. But he didn't say yes either. He's the king. His son said no, and the king remained silent. So Krishna understood the situation. It's very intriguing. Krishna then began speaking to Dhritarashtra. This is the portent of this silence, is because it's your religion. It's very clear to me that the merit that has brought you to the position of becoming born in a royal family and for a temporary time assuming the position of king on behalf of your brother Pandu, by your choice of irreligious acts, your merit of piety is quickly going, and you're going to lose the kingdom. It's very clear. And the way that Krishna was speaking in detail, it's described in Mahabharata, not here in detail, but the whole audience was being moved that Krishna was right, because Krishna was right, and he's Krishna speaking. And they were moved. And Duryodhan was seething. And Krishna then began speaking directly about Duryodhan. Then he began speaking directly to Duryodhan, who didn't budge an inch. And he got up from the assembly and walked out. And those that were kind of leaning towards what Krishna was saying, but they were in Duryodhan's camp, they left with Duryodhan. And Duryodhan made an explicit plan. We have to get rid of Krishna. Right. So there was this plan that on Duryodhan's signal, they would remove Krishna from the assembly. And when he came back in, everyone could sense bad plan. They didn't know what the plan was, but something bad. And Vidura said it explicitly, because Vidura wasn't in the door was just wise. He didn't hear their backroom talk. He just knew Duryodhan and knew his spirit, and specifically told Dhritarashtra, what is about to happen is going to destroy the entire dynasty. Please do something. Please correct the situation before it's totally destroyed. Duryodhan lost it. And he said, seize Krishna now. And they went charging at Krishna. Krishna smiled. And he began expanding his form larger and larger and manifested the universal form right in the assembly. The very detailed description in Mahabharata. And everyone stood back. Krishna withdrew the form and he peacefully walked out of the assembly. Didn't say a further word. The assembly was like in total turmoil because they heard what Krishna said. They knew what the consequence was. They saw his divinity. Bad program. So Dhritarashtra was pretty concerned. I think we're headed down a path that's not so good. I better speak with my younger brother, Vidura. So now I'm going to read from the Bhagavatam text 9, 10, in chapter 1. When Vidura was invited by his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, for consultation, Vidura entered the house and gave instructions, which were exactly to the point. His advice is well known, and instructions by Vidura are approved by expert ministers of state, that we need to bear in mind who Vidura is. He's not just Vidura, Uncle Vidura. This is Yamaraj, taking part in Krishna's pastimes as Uncle Vidura. And he's one of our 12 Mahajans, and he certainly knows what's what. He knows what is dharma and adharma, certainly. Vidura said, you must now return the legitimate share to Yudhisthira, who has no enemies and has been forbearing through untold sufferings due to your offenses. He, Yudhisthira, is waiting with his younger brothers, among whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing heavily like a snake. Surely you are afraid of him. No purport. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, has accepted the sons of Pritha as his kinsmen. And all the kings of the world are with Lord Shri Krishna. He is present in his home with all his family members, the kings and princes of the Yadu dynasty, who have conquered an unlimited number of rulers. And he is their lord. So the purport is saying Krishna's the lord. He just showed his divinity. And moreover, and he's, you know, you want to place yourself against Krishna, and not only Krishna, the whole Yadu dynasty. And how many kingdoms have aligned themselves with the Yadu dynasty? How many adverse kingdoms have been crushed by the Yadu dynasty? The universal power of divinity was behind the Pandavas, is Prabhupada's purport. So that's moral instruction. Now, and practical instruction as well. Next, you are maintaining offense personified by the name Duryodhan as your infallible son. But he is envious of Lord Krishna. And because you are thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you are devoid of all auspicious qualities. relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good for the whole family. He's saying that in front of none other than offense personified, Duryodhan. In the purport, Prabhupada is discussing the moral instructions of Chanakya Pandit, where a good son, can protect his father if the father has some difficulty, and because of that difficulty, after death, is not released, but goes to some place where he's in great difficulty. The son can release the father from that bondage by offering the prasad of Lord Vishnu in Gaya. But if the son is averse to Lord Vishnu, he can't do anything to help his father. And he gives the Chanakya Pandit advice of a blind eye. I don't know about this medical procedure, but Prabhupada says sometimes when there's a blind eye, not only it can't see, but it just gives pain, and so sometimes the doctor advises, remove the blind eye. You're not going to regain your seeing capacity, but the pain will go away. So, similarly, as Chanakya Pandit advised, Vidura's advising, remove the blind eye. The sun is just pain. But the description of this advice of Duryodhan, of Vidura about Duryodhan, goes way back to the very day that he was born. So I'm going to do a little Mahabharat presentation now for a while, because this is a section of Bhagavatam that immediately parallels Mahabharat. Only more details in Mahabharat, less details here. Well, first I'll read the next verse, because they connect. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhan, who was swollen in anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhan was in the company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. So, Prabhupada writes that it's through the bad association of Shakuni, who was his maternal uncle, that Duryodhan became corrupted. It's not like Duryodhan was a good guy before that, but even good persons, Prabhupada has taught us this, and parents naturally are concerned about the same subject, that even somebody good can be corrupted by bad association. Or say it even more strongly, wherever you see bad behavior, you can trace it back to bad association somewhere. So you can't just blame it's the fault of the bad association, that's all. You know, it's some choices, but it's when one yields to bad association, you're inviting the corruption of good behavior and good character. What to speak of a person like Duryodhan. So I'll go back to, this is a little bit about Shakuni and a little bit about the birth of Duryodhan. When, way back to Maharaj Santanu, he had married Ganga, but there was a promise that Ganga made that the children that are born by us, you'll give them to me and you'll make no protest. One after another, the children were killed by the mother. So after their birth, so when it came to Bhima's birth, he protested. So she said, here's your son, and I'll see you later. So Santanu had, as a son, Bhishma, but no wife or no queen. And so who became the queen of Santanu? Satyavati. And Satyavati with Santanu bore two sons. Who were those two sons? Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. So with the decease of her husband, Santanu, then it was time for Vichitravirya, Chitrangada, to become the king. But the reign of Chitrangada did not last for long because there was a Gandharva of the same name, Chitrangada. And Chitrangada thought, who is this upstart that calls himself Chitrangada? I'll go and have battle with him and show him who is the Chitrangada. And the son of Santanu, Chitrangada, was killed by the Gandharva by the same name. Fortunately, there was a younger brother, Vichitravirya. Then there's the whole detailed description of Bhishma making arrangements for the marriage of Vichitravirya. You know that long story, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And when they were brought back, Amba said, I can't marry Vichitravirya because I've given my heart to another man. So Bhishma said, fine, you go back and your two sisters can marry Vichitravirya, and they did. And then Amba had this, she was rejected by her husband, and then she came to Bhishma and he said, I can't marry you. And there was the get back at Bhishma whole episode and all of that long story. But so Vichitravirya was married to Ambika and Ambalika. And as fate would have it, before there were children, he also died. So Satyavati is in a... Her husband died, her two sons died, and now she's in big anxiety because the two wives of Vichitravirya were so faithful and attached to Vichitravirya, they wanted to enter into the funeral pyre of their husband. And she somehow was able to persuade them, don't do that, you should serve your husband by producing sons that can continue the dynasty, because otherwise the dynasty is finished after you. And she invoked this rule that the brother in Vedic culture, where a husband is not able to produce sons, the brother of the husband can produce sons with the wife. Now that your husband is gone, your brother or his brother. So they were thinking his brother meant Bhishma. And every, you know, exalted Bhishma. So their reluctant acceptance of Satyavati's proposal was thinking Bhishma would become the father of their children. And when Satyavati approached Bhishma, the answer was, no way, I've made a vow. Oh, but please, please, and here's all the reasons, please, please, I made a vow. And Bhishma never goes against his vow. How can I break my vow? But I have a solution. You inform me you have another son. Before you were married to Shantanu, there was another son, Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva is also Vichitravirya's brother, and Vyasadeva can be the father of the children of Ambika and Ambalika. And you know that whole description. Ambika, Ambalika, and Ambika's maidservant. So Vidura was the maidservant, born of the maidservant of Ambika. But that was the third son, and the first was Dhritarashtra, who was blind, and Pandu, who was infirm. Not a full capacity to maintain himself. So, in course of time, as the three sons of in the royal family, Vidura was married to a Shudrani, but even Bhishma Dev is so elderly, so learned. He's one of the 12 Mahajans. But even at that stage, Vidura was so much respected by everybody, including Bhishma, that Bhishma went to Vidura and sought the advice of Vidura about the marriage of Dhritarashtra and Pandu. And Bhishma Dev's plan was as follows. Dhritarashtra, although he was blind, he was very powerful. And there is the daughter of the king of Kandahar. And the daughter of, then it was Gandahar, now it's Kandahar in Afghanistan. The king of the mountain region, it's described in Mahabharata. He has a daughter, Gandhari, and Gandhari received, she's so elevated and so qualified, she directly received a benediction from Lord Shiva that she would have 100 sons. Wouldn't it be very wonderful for our dynasty if there was this wonderful alliance and with one queen, 100 sons, blessed by Lord Shiva? So Vidura approved that plan. A messenger was sent to the king, Suvala was the king's name. But King Suvala didn't like the idea so much initially. How can my super qualified daughter marry somebody who's blind? Didn't like the idea initially, but as he considered it, he thought the alliance between our kingdom and this dynasty of the Kauravas, it would be very good. They're extremely virtuous, and for generations and generations and generations, a very, very powerful and well-respected dynasty. And for our kingdom to marry into that kingdom, that would be very good. I'm sure the son is very qualified. He consulted his ministers. His ministers approved. So he accepted the proposal, and the marriage took place. And to accompany the daughter, something like Kamsa accompanying Devaki, along with Vasudev, Shukuni, the son of the king, was sent. So Shukuni became the brother-in-law of Dhritarashtra. And Shukuni spent time with his sister in Hastinapur so that she felt very settled and peaceful, and then he returned back to Afghanistan. Back to the mountain region. Then there was a need to have a wife for Pandu, and marriage service, the online marriage service, no, the the arrangement that he had, the two arrangements that he had considered were the daughter of Kunti Bhoja and the daughter of the king of Madra. And so it was the Swayamvar for Kunti, and he accompanied Bhishma Dev, accompanied Pandu. And Pandu, his stature was so strong and powerful that when it came to the Swayamvar ceremony and Kunti saw him with shyness, she immediately took the garland and placed the garland on Pandu. And everyone, all the other kings and princes that were there, that were assembled, they were not willing to fight with Pandu because that sometimes would happen. They just quietly accepted that's her preference, and they were married and they returned, husband and wife, back to Hastinapur. But the he was thinking, Bhishma was thinking, Dhritarashtra will have 100 sons because Gandhari has had this benediction, but it would be a good idea, just for securing the continuation of the dynasty, that Pandu have a second queen. Not so likely that Kunti will have 100 sons. So Bhishma personally went to the kingdom in the south of India. King Shalya was his name. And because Bhishma was so respected, he was treated with great royal honor. Although he wasn't king, he was of the royal family and of renowned fame, even at this stage. So he's received very, very wonderfully, seated on a jeweled golden throne and honored with the highest, like a demigod had come into the palace. And Bhishma presented his purpose of coming. I've come for the hand of your daughter to marry Pandu. Please let me know if you would accept. And immediately the answer was, most certainly we'll accept. But in our dynasty, there's this tradition that gifts of noble value should be offered when there is marriage within our family. Bhishma said, I'm aware of that tradition, and I brought pearls and jewels and ornaments and gold coins. And so all of that presentation was made to King Shalya, and he accepted that his daughter would marry, and his daughter married Pandu. So now Pandu is with two wives, Kunti and Madri, and Dhritarashtra is with his wife Gandhari, and they're in Hastinapur. Pandu is ruling, although his elder brother Dhritarashtra by birth is older, by his bodily defect of being blind, he's not entitled to be king, so Pandu became king. But Pandu, by his own nature, he didn't like palace life so much. He liked country life much more. So he stayed in the country. And one after the other, the children were born. Yudhisthira was born first. But a detail that's described in Mahabharata is Gandhari became pregnant first. So while Pandu was ruling, if the son of Gandhari was born first, then that son would become the king, the next king after Pandu, because his father was the elder of the two brothers. So Dhritarashtra's son would be born first, and Gandhari's pregnancy continued much longer than pregnancy normally continues. A long time. So long that Yudhisthira was born first. And when Gandhari understood that Yudhisthira was born first, although she's a very elevated personality, she became so disappointed and angry. With her fist, she pounded her abdomen, and out came a lump of flesh. One big lump of flesh, and she didn't know what to do. So they were going to dispose of the lump of flesh, and the advice was given by the sages, no, take the lump of flesh and divide it into 100 pieces and put those pieces in pots, cover the pots, and after some time a child will be born from each of the 100 pots. Quite unusual, but Gandhari followed that advice. And sure enough, the first son to be born was Dhritarashtra, or Duryodhan. And from the moment that Duryodhan came as a small baby, the description in Mahabharata is that all inauspicious omens were present all at once. You know, the howling of the jackals, and the daytime it was as dark as night, and thunder and lightning together, and all inauspicious omens. Vidura read the tea leaves and he said, Dhritarashtra, it's very obvious that this child that has just been born is an inauspicious person. You should do the needful. He should be removed from the royal family somehow, by some means. Just as he's advising here, we just read, the blind eye should be removed. But from that very first obvious gesture, Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra couldn't do it. So the advice that Vidura just gave is not new advice. In the course of their growing up, there's one description in Mahabharata where Vidura spent the entire night, like after everyone had retired, he was going at it with Dhritarashtra to help him understand, what you're the king. It's your duty to give protection to all the citizens. And the qualities of your son are going to destroy the entire kingdom and destroy you. Everything will be ruined. You must remove him. He spent the whole night into the dawn of the morning sun, and Dhritarashtra wouldn't budge. Vidura really tried with all of his might, all of his wisdom, and Dhritarashtra respected him. It's not like, you know, I don't like what you say, and just dismissed him. He understood. He always sought the counsel of Vidura. Even Bhishma sought the counsel of Vidura. So meanwhile, while this is going on, Krishna's growing up, because Krishna and the Pandavas are of similar age. So Krishna's growing up, and then Krishna comes to Mathura, and Krishna with his bare fist kills Kamsa. So they're now living in Mathura, which is not so far from Hastinapur. Mathura and Delhi are not so far. So Krishna and Balaram are in Mathura, and they have their encounters with, after Krishna killed Kamsa, the two wives of Kamsa were daughters of Jarasandha. That's a long story too. Do you know how Jarasandha gave his daughters in marriage to Kamsa? Do you know that story? It's Kuvalyapida. Kuvalyapida? You know who Kuvalyapida, the big elephant that was in Kamsa's court? So it goes, this is from Garga Samhita. Jarasandha was out conquering, and Kamsa was out conquering, because they're, you know, two powerful macho kings. I guess that their program is conquering, showing their prowess. So Jarasandha had captured this huge, powerful elephant, named Kovalyapita. And he had chained him with a strong, several chains. But in the night, Kovalyapita just ripped the chains and went running north. And the soldiers were chasing and he kept going. He went right into the camp where Kamsa was. And Kamsa took Kovalyapita by the trunk and whirled him around and around and around and threw him in the air and came landing on his head right in Jarasandha's camp. And Jarasandha thought, wow, this guy's good. I want to find out who this guy is that just like did that thing. So he found out it was Kamsa and he said, I want to make two gifts to you. Here's Kovalyapita. You can keep him. And here's my daughters in marriage. You're a qualified husband for my daughters. So they married Kamsa. And when Krishna killed Kovalyapita and killed Kamsa, the two queens went running back to Jarasandha. Oh, they killed my husband. Please take revenge. I vow I will take revenge. I will destroy this person who has killed your husband. So he amassed a huge army and went to Mathura to try to kill Krishna. And you know what happened? Krishna said, don't worry, Balaram, I'll take care of this person. Single-handedly, Krishna alone on the battlefield destroyed the entire army. And every soldier, every chariot, every elephant totally destroyed except one person was left on the battlefield. He told Jarasandha, you just can go home now. He was totally humiliated. He was thinking on his way back, I should just give up my life. But he was advised, no, you shouldn't give up your life. You should get another army together. So 21 times he got his armies together and every time the same thing happened. He was showing determination like devotees in service to Krishna. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. Be very determined in service to Krishna. Finally, you know, he figured it out. I need to make an alliance. So he made an alliance with another who became an enemy of Krishna. Kalyavana. Long story. So Kalyavana came from one direction. Jarasandha came from another direction. Krishna, seeing the two armies coming from these two directions, told Balaram, I have to do something to protect the Yadus. This is not an ordinary circumstance. So he made an arrangement for Vishwakarma to build the city of Dwarka. And he transported the whole Yadu dynasty and settled them in their residential quarters in Dwarka while Balaram's holding off the two armies. And then Krishna comes back and he's on the battlefield and he leads Kalyavana into the cave of Mushukunda and thus ends Kalyavana. And then there's Jarasandha. So Krishna and Balaram went up this mountain as if they were fleeing from the battle both times and battlefield and went up the mountain and jumped down from the mountain. And the mountain had caught fire, so Jarasandha thought, Krishna's finished, I did it. Mighty Jarasandha. Krishna's afraid of me. So deluded. So then Krishna and Balaram return to Dwarka. So Krishna and Balaram are in Dwarka now. And they're of a young age, similar age to the Pandavas. Meanwhile, the Pandavas, they're growing up in the forest with Pandu and Kunti and Madri. And finally, the death of Pandu comes in the forest. And so Kunti and her sons come back to Hastinapur with the heir to the throne is Yudhisthira. And It's interesting to try to piece all this chronology together. At that time, around at that time is, so they're little boys, young boys, not so little, young boys, you know, say teenage, something like that. This is when Drona comes onto the scene. Because Drona was rejected by Drupad. So, because Kripacharya and Kripi, our brother and sister, he went to get some assistance. Drona went to get some assistance from his brother-in-law, Kripacharya. And the suggestion was made, maybe you can become, you have this skill, you're a brahmana, but you've gained this capacity from Parashuram. You can train these boys in Dhanurved. So that proposal was made to Bhishma. I can train the boys in Dhanurved. But he also disclosed what his intention was. His intention was, I want to get back at Drupad. Because we grew up together, and he made a promise. And he's violated his promise. And what's a king that violates his promise? To a Brahmin. And something needs to be done to correct that situation. So my plan is, I'll train the Pandavas, the Kauravas, all these boys, the 100 boys and the other, all the royal family boys, and then as Dakshin, I'll have them defeat Drupad. And then having Drupad become defeated, I'll then give half the kingdom back to Drupad. But, you know, I'll protect his religious principles. What do you think? Bhishma understood the mentality. It wasn't the highest of mentality, but he understood he'd be a very good teacher and accepted the proposal. So he became the teacher. In the course of being the teacher, this intense rivalry started to increase. The rivalry between Duryodhan and his brothers and the Pandavas. Because when they first came back, they were just like boys. But you know how boys are. And especially Bhima. Bhima would like, you know, they'd be playing. And he'd take one of the boys and just toss them in the air and they'd go flying for hundreds of yards and come crashing on the ground. And then they'd wrestle and he'd defeat everybody all the time because he's powerful. Just playing. Duryodhan couldn't stand it. The enmity was brewing and brewing and brewing. And finally, when Arjuna became the chief archer, you know, the fish, what do you see? It pierced. So, I only see the eye of the fish. I only see the eye of the fish. And so he won the gold medal. He won the blue ribbon. He was the best of the students. Duryodhan didn't like that. But then came the Dakshin time. So the Pandavas said, you can do it. You're all qualified. You can go and take care of this wish of our teacher, Drona. They were defeated by Drupad. Then the Pandavas were turned to, and just the five brothers totally defeated Drupad and all of his army. Ooh, Duryodhan didn't like that. The enmity was so thick. Then Drona wanted to further train the boys. This is described in Mahabharata. So he invited Balaram to come and teach, particularly Bhima and Duryodhan and the art of fighting with a club. While Balaram was there, he trained them both, but he could sense, whoa, this isn't good. There's a really bad mood here. So when he returned back to Dwaraka, he informed Krishna, we got a problem in Hastinapur. So Krishna decided, I'll send one of my best ministers, Akrura. Akrura gets these difficult assignments. Krishna sent Akrura to Hastinapur. go there. This is the assignment. Assess the situation. Make sure you have a clear understanding of the situation, and then you can report back to me. Gokura went. Messenger of Krishna, coming from Dwarka to Hastinapur. And that, now everyone's already knowing Krishna is the personality of Godhead. He showed that previously. No, subsequently, excuse me, subsequently. So, but he's killed Kamsa. And, you know, so many wonderful deeds that Krishna has already performed. And here comes Akura from the Yadu dynasty, one of their chief ministers. So he was honored with great, great, great respect. As soon as the reception was over, he got right down to business. He requested a discussion with Kunti and wanted Vidura to be there. So it's very, very nice. I wish I could reproduce it properly. Oh. He just, as soon as he was with Kunti, because she's such a devotee, she immediately began asking about Krishna. Immediately began asking about Krishna. How are the Yadu dynasty? How are the members of the royal family? How is my dear Lord Krishna? Her mood was so Krishna conscious, so affectionate unto Krishna, that Akura was really moved. So he gave his report and asked for hers. You know, how are you doing? Krishna wants to know how you are doing. And she began explaining very vividly, because although she's a woman, she's Queen Kunti. She's a member of the royal family. She understands diplomacy. So she very quickly and explicitly described the dynamic. When we first came back from the forest, everything was very nice. But very rapidly, things have deteriorated. And of this recent incident, this activity of my sons defeating Drupad and showing their superior prowess above the Kauravas, the sons of Dhritarashtra, it's very, very, very difficult. And I fear the worst. And then she just broke down crying. And without Krishna's shelter, how can we go on? How can we even live another day without Krishna's shelter? So there's Uncle Vidura and Akura pacifying Kunti. Particularly Vidura. Both Vidura and Akura, but particularly Vidura. His words immediately entered, just because what he spoke was true and she knew it. Just by hearing the truth, her despondency left. She said, your sons are not ordinary. They're sons of demigods. You know, they're your sons. They're the sons of demigods. They can't be harmed by anybody. They're extraordinary personalities. And besides, Vyasadeva has said they will live long lives and they will rule majestically, and all of this is foretold. So please, Kunti, be peaceful. And immediately her distress went away. But that was like, you know, the first day that Akura was there. He remained for another 3 months to get a very thorough understanding. He was a good minister. Very thorough understanding. So when he felt he had a clear understanding, he was ready to return. He requested audience with the king before returning. And Dhritarashtra was very happy to have Akura come and spend some time. So Akura didn't waste any words. He got right down to business and instructed him. He's a minister. I'm going to return back to Dwarka, and I want to pass on the following message. It was three basic messages. It was, the first one was that The sons of Pandu are like your sons. When Pandu died, it was your responsibility to care for them like your sons. So what is the difference between your sons and Pandu's sons? But you're seeing a difference and favoring your sons over Pandu's sons. And this attachment you have to your body and the children from your body, it's the impetus for irreligion. And with irreligion, everything good will be spoiled. Please don't do like this. Then he spoke morality and said, according to our practice, the firstborn son is the king, the rightful heir to the throne by law and moral conduct. It's Yudhisthira, and you know that. So do the right thing. Don't do the wrong thing. If you act on the wrong principle, you'll be destroyed. Then again he said that any act born of ignorance, one is sure to suffer. No good will come of an act that's born of ignorance. Please don't do like this. Please do the right thing, the moral thing, the proper thing. Install Yudhisthira as the prince regent. And when he was finished speaking, Dhritarashtra said, all the words that you have spoken are correct. And I can't live by them. It seems that fate has its destiny, and we all have to accept our destiny. I can't follow your words. Whatever the consequences of that are, I accept. So Kuru left, realizing, like Vidura had realized, it's hopeless. His attachment is so strong. And this attachment later becomes played upon by bad association, by Shakuni in particular. Akura went back and informed Krishna. After Akura left, Dhritarashtra was hearing from the people that he's ruling that Dhritarashtra is getting old and Yudhisthira is of age and he's loved by everybody and he's the rightful heir. Same thing as what Akura was saying, the people were saying. And he was realizing, I'm losing control of my population here, the people that I'm ruling. So he then consulted his ministers. He consulted Bhishma. He consulted Kripacharya. He consulted Dronacharya. His ministers all advised, yes, you should install Yudhisthira as the prince regent, the one who will become the king. So Dhritarashtra accepted that advice and made the announcement, Yudhisthira will be installed, without any discussion with his 100 sons, headed by Duryodhan. And when that news came to Duryodhana, he didn't like that at all. So he got together his friends and his leading brothers, plus Karna and Shakuni. So here comes the corruption, the further corruption of, you know, the animosity or the envy. It's not difficult to corrupt it and amplify it. But Shakuni was very good at it. Shakuni, very much like Dhritarashtra, because Shakuni is the brother of Dhritarashtra's wife, he wants to see Dhritarashtra or the sons of Dhritarashtra become king at any cost. So Duryodhan asked Karna and Shakuni what to do. My father has made this pronouncement. And Shakuni said, we have to destroy the Pandavas. That's all. Before all of this happens, we have to destroy the Pandavas. But because they're so powerful, we have to get them out of Hastinapur, and by some trick or deception, destroy them. And Karna said, wait a minute, we're Kshatriyas. We should fight. We should fight them in a fair battle and destroy them. And Shakuni said, you're just a boy. What do you know? Please consider. They already demonstrated their superior strength with Drupad. All 100 sons in all of your armies were defeated by Drupad, and 5 of them alone defeated Drupad. And Karna said, well, that was just luck. And, you know, we didn't estimate the strength of Drupad, but they had that advantage. Now they knew the strength of Drupad, and they were prepared, and that's why they won. We didn't win. Shakuni said, you're a small boy. We're going to go forward with this plan. And Duryodhan liked the plan. Karna got up and left. But Shakuni explained, he went in detail and laid out the plan of how to do this. He said, your father is so attached to you. If you go and tell him, I cannot live as long as these people are on the same planet with me, I'll give up my life. He's too attached to you. Even, you know, he won't like the idea. He'll follow it. But I have another plan also before that. Your father doesn't take any action without consulting with ministers. I've got just the minister to send to him. So one of the ministers from Afghanistan, were related to his father, ministers of his father's. It was Kanika. So Shakuni, the brother-in-law, goes to Dhritarashtra and says, I have a wonderful minister. I'd like you to take some advice. This is a very delicate situation. Wouldn't you like to hear some good advice from a good minister? So Kanika's advice was, your sons see the Pandavas as their enemy. And because they're the enemy of your sons, they're your enemy. And because they're your enemy, you need to address it. You can't just elevate them to a position of prince regent and they ruling, because your sons see them as enemy. You have to address this problem. And you have to address the problem by any means. But because the strength of the Pandavas, you have to do it by devious means. One means or another, you have to rid the kingdom of the Pandavas, and you need to do it now. The longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to be to do it, because they'll become more popular and more popular and more popular and more powerful. You have to act now. Think it over, Dhritarashtra. So that preceded Duryodhan coming and making his appeal, the House of Lack appeal. Dhritarashtra didn't like it. Kill the Pandavas? They're my brother's sons. When I was small and I couldn't see, my younger brother took care of me like he was my older brother. I was completely dependent upon him, and he was so merciful. He cared for me like so perfectly. And so he had sons first, so his sons become king, and that's the way it should be. But you want me to kill his sons? I can't do it. But Duryodhan played on the heartstrings of his father, knowing his father was more attached to them. Killing is one thing, but if then I give up my life. You don't know what it's like. And so on. And he spoke so strongly that again, Dhritarashtra remained silent. And he knew he had him. So the specific plan was a plan that Shakuni cooked up, Shakuni and Parochana. Let us do this. It'll look nice. This is actually what Kanika's advice was. Keep it so that it looks like you're their friend. You're their well-wisher. We'll take care of the rest. So the plan was build a nice summer cottage somewhere by a nice lake and a nice place, and we'll just build it with this highly ignitable materials, and when they're asleep at night, we'll put the thing on fire, and that would look like an accident caught on fire. It was Shakuni's plan. But the person that was the instrument of putting it forward was Duryodhan. But behind Duryodhan was Shakuni, which is what is being expressed here. So the corrupt, if someone is envious, through good association, one can become freed from that envy. It's possible. Certainly, Kaliya, the chief of the envious personalities, became freed from his envy by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. And the nature of all conditioned souls, the six enemies of the conditioned soul, are to some degree or another within the heart of every living being. Because in the spiritual world, there's the absence of envy. But in the material world, there's envy. And envy, if inflamed by bad association, then one, you know, from the standpoint of Mahabharata, one will then deviate from what is the right thing to do. You know, discrimination about right and wrong gets blurred. And in fact, what is not to be done is considered what is to be done, and vice versa. What is to be done is considered what is not to be done. Mode of ignorance takes over. And that kind of discrimination is what rules. But through good association, that can change. Because inherently, on a deeper level, every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna and has a natural relation with Krishna. And awakening that, acting on a higher platform, what is to be done follows. That's what happened with Vidura and Dhritarashtra. Vidura's advice was always wise on the moral platform. But after he had gone for purification and had come back after hearing from Maitreya, he was not just, you know, an elevated learned person, you know, at least in terms of the Leela that was being enacted. He was a Mahabhagavata. And the strength of his being a Mahabhagavata, he moved the heart of Dhritarashtra, that which couldn't be moved before, even by Krishna, or even by Vidura, or Akrura. He was too attached. Of course, there's another difference also. By the time Vidura returned, his sons were long gone. There was nothing. Nothing but shame and old age, and his teeth were falling out, and his liver wasn't functioning, and you know, the knock of death was on his door. That had some part in it also. But even in that case, some people, they can't hear. They can't hear. So it's important, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto is that we should hear this teaching regularly. Srimvatas Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, or hearing the transcendental topics about Krishna regularly, and serving those great souls who are living that message of Srimad Bhagavatam, doing both of those regularly, then all that is inauspicious in the heart becomes removed. I'll end with this. Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj. Any of you know Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj? He's German, GBC member, and travels all over the place, and in Europe and Eastern Europe. He just today sent me a preview of a DVD that he's been working on for like 4 years. That's the focus of it is the importance of simple living, high thinking, and it starts a lot of focus on Lokanath Maharaj and his village life in Maharashtra, and then it goes to the New Vrajadham in Hungary, and the values of simple living, high thinking, sustainability, and all of that. It's promoting that message. But in the part that I know from my discussions with Lokanath Maharaj, that which resonates very deeply in his heart, is that the simplicity of simple village life where he grew up, it's changing. It's rapidly deteriorating. And this film nicely documents that. But one of the components of village life is that the elderly, particularly the brahmanas, would regularly engage the people of the village morning and evening in hearing, like we're doing right now. You know, for us to do, it's, you know, on occasion we do. But village life, it's just part of everyday life. And they show pictures of the brahmanas reading from Ramayana, and then picture of, you know, Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman. You know, the children that are growing up grow up with that, not only the children, the whole village grows up with that picture. And Prabhupada described that when he was a young boy, whenever there was some function, public function, always there was some reading from Ramayana or Mahabharata. Always. And now what is it? We don't, you know, St. Patrick's Day, or Christmas, or, you know, for a Western culture. It's just, you know, it's commercial or social at best. Anyway, without going into it too much, the value of putting that in our lives as practicing devotees, it's missing in our culture, and it's not just, you know, the culture of the West, it's the world. It's being influenced by Kali in the form of modernity and commercialism and so on. It's missing. You know, the hero is no longer Ram and Hanuman. It's, what's that guy in, there's so many books about?
Harry Potter,
yeah. Harry Potter. When I travel and visit, on the bookshelves of, you know, the intelligent young kids, they've got the whole set. I don't know how absorbed they are, but it's just, it's part of the culture of America. That's what they grow up with, and it's not Ramayana and Mahabharata, it's Harry Potter. And besides the fact that, you know, Krishna and Ram are missing, what is there instead? You know, this horrible other black magic thing. Anyway, that's a whole other. At the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, there was a law student, an Indian woman who was in law school. She was describing to me, you know, I was curious, what is it about these Harry Potter books that all the kids in the world are reading? And I mean, it's not just in America, it's all over the world. In New York, last time I rode on the subway, I was coming back from some Harinam program and riding in the subway, and there was, you know, a Muslim woman, you know, with her you know, the thing down to here and just this, you know, little part of her eyes, and then her two daughters dressed the same way. And as soon as they sat down in the book, in the train, she gave one Harry Potter book to this girl, one Harry, and they, through their little slat, they're reading Harry Potter. And she's reading Harry Potter. Oh my God. So, this law student said, "So, you know, where is this all going? You know, there's probably some kind of pseudo-spiritual message embedded in this." And she then described to me what, with shock and horror, what she found out what it was. So those who are parents and don't read Harry Potter, here's one of the things that's in the final volume. It's how you become immortal. You know how you become immortal? Something like, no, you know, the kids might correct me, it's not like that, it's like this. But something like, you know, when there's a violent murder, then the soul splits. And when the soul splits, one of those can inhabit other bodies and live forever. So put two and two together. And you're a little kid, you know, fascinated with all the characters of Harry Potter and the very expert writing of this author, and you find out how you can become immortal. Put two and two together. What to speak of, you know, where's Krishna and where's Ram and where's spiritual master and where's, you know, anything resembling spiritual reality. It's absent. Black magic and become immortal by some violent act of murder. Something like that. So, for our own elevation, purification, fixing of values of life, and connecting with the personality of Godhead, hearing these wonderful messages, and especially hearing these as they're presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, because in Srimad Bhagavatam it's more than morality, it's emphasis upon taking shelter of the personality of Godhead as the person of the absolute truth. That's our Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a very nice combination. And we'll spend some time together next day or so on this topic. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned the CD that
Maharaj
sent you.
He didn't send a CD. It was a place that where I could download a preview of it. And he's asking me as the GBC chairman to make some comment on it so that others might feel some encouragement to learn more about the subject matter. You'd like to see the CD or the DVD?
Well, the subject matter.
Sure.
Especially here, like in Michigan, our unemployment rate's over 20, was officially over 16%, probably over 20%. Prabhupada says everybody should be employed.
Yeah. Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj, you contact him. He's Pam Ho person. And he's planning to have it ready, if I understood correctly. He wants it to be available at the Mayapur Festival. So I don't think it's like printed and ready to roll till then. This is just a preview thing. But you can contact him. I'm sure that he has a sales representative in the U.S. and you don't have to go to Mayapur to get it. You can get it locally. He's organized. He's a very good organizer, inspired preacher. Anyone else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the very instructive class. I have a question regarding, you mentioned like how Dhritarashtra was so attached and in spite of all the good advice that he got, he could not like really overcome his attachments. In relation to like devotional life, there are some of those strong attachments, and also there are attachments that we don't even know that are strong. How do we like make progress to overcome those, or even to
take good association? If you desire, Krishna will send good association, and then you take that good association. That's the short answer. Dhritarashtra was so attached, he couldn't. The good association was provided in multiple ways, in multiple times. And he chose to remain attached. And because he chose to remain attached, he became degraded. And those who he was supposed to give protection to became further degraded. If he had, that the message from the multiple sources was, lift him up, lift your sons up, or in this otherwise remove them. But he couldn't do either. So they became further degraded, and it became a problem for the world. But from his own perspective, or from your own perspective, desire to become free from those, desire to reach Krishna, even better, desire for the purification necessary to reach Krishna. And for that to happen, attachments need to be relinquished. Prabhupada gives this example. Your child is holding on to something that you consider to be dangerous for them to have in their hand. So one thing to do is try to take it out of their hand. And what happens? Scream. Or one can, this is Prabhupada's example, some rattling toy or some glittering object, and you show that glittering object or the rattling toy. And they drop the thing that's in their hand and reach for this other thing. Raso varjam raso piyasya pram drishtva navartate. It's difficult to give up things even though they're sources of misery if we're attached to them. But if there's an opportunity to develop a higher taste, then that will help us let go of those things that we're attached to that are unwholesome. I was just reading something where Prabhupada was describing that to present Krishna consciousness in the West, he did not give rules and regulations, and he described why. He said if you tell a butcher killing animals isn't good, he'll disregard. That's his profession, that's what he does. Or, gave some other examples. You give a fool some good advice and they'll become angry. So I didn't introduce rules and regulations, but I engaged persons in chanting the holy name. And purification, through purification, then some readiness to accept some rules and regulations. So if you can, and each of us can become more attentive in our chanting, the quality of our chanting, and the quality way in which we take association, and the simple message of serving the devotees of the Lord. Those activities are so powerful that it'll provide some purification to gradually reduce those things, those attachments that we have. But isn't it your experience? It's all of our experience that when you have close relationship with those who are guiding and helping to steer you on the path of pure devotional service, it helps to overcome attachments more than just kind of off on your own struggling. Strong practice, strong sadhana, daily. Good hearing. And stay away from Shukunis and Duryodhans and Dhritarashtras. Anything else? Okay. So, should we have prasadam? Oh, you already had prasadam.
Some of us.
Some had prasadam, some didn't. So let's, those that didn't can take prasadam. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.